Hi, welcome back. I've always been skeptical about the whole find your purpose conversation. I used to really buy into that storyline that you needed a purposeful career. And at 25, I really felt like I had that. I was actually obsessed with some of my first jobs. It was my identity. Then I left my first startup around 28 and felt I'd lost such a massive chunk of myself and my identity. For me, this idea of purpose suddenly felt elusive and I couldn't quite catch it. It was out of grips and it started to feel like a really heavy pressure, like we're all meant to have this singular life-defining passion and I didn't. So many of us reach a point where we know we want something more, we just don't know what. And that's why I wanted to have this conversation with Lauren. She's a coach and actually she's my coach who I started working with about 5 months ago. She's the founder of Mood London and someone who knows firsthand what it's like to pivot careers, feel lost in the process and come out the other side with real clarity. Lauren has a way of stripping back and helping people actually listen to what they want beneath the expectations of ego and the societal shoulds. We talk about career shifts, identity crisis, and why making a change can feel so terrifying, even when we know that we need to. Lauren is the perfect dose of woo-woo but sharp. She's well-read and full of the kind of wisdom that makes you rethink what's possible for yourself. Whether you're at a crossroads or just wondering what more could look like, this episode is for you. Let's get into it. If life feels like a whirlwind of clarity and confusion, pull up a chair. Welcome to The Weird Years. Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Excited to have you here on the beige couch.
I cannot think of anything more exciting for a coach than to be in my client's vision.
I know,
the podcast come to life.
I love that. For the listeners, Lauren is my coach. We started working together in November.
Yeah,
I want to say, yeah. So a few months now. It's been a while.
Yeah.
And it's been transformative and is literally the reason why the podcast exists.
Well, I think that's doing me too much credit. It's all credit to you. You've brought it to life and it's amazing.
No, but genuinely, to listeners, Lauren kind of single-handedly dragged me out of my depth of the weirdness at the end of last summer. So
this is the magic of coaching, right? Helps with the weird years.
So do you want to give me a little overview? Well, not for me, for the listeners, of what you're doing now and, you know, who you are as a coach.
I would love to. So Mood London is my coaching studio. So I work with women who are typically navigating like a period of confusion in their lives. They're maybe looking to launch something new, like change career, launch a business, reposition their business. They've sort of lost their confidence a bit. So my job as a coach is to really help them get clarity over what it is they want, how they can get it, explore and move through all the sort of unconscious blocks that so many of us, I think, experience and have no idea what to do with while we're in these weird years. And yeah, I also teach meditation. I host workshops, hosting my first retreat this weekend, which is so exciting. And yeah, that's it really.
I love it. It feels like coaching is one of those things that there's a lot of preconceptions around. And I'm sure everyone listening, either people are like clocked in, like, yes, I really want to hear this. Or they're like, oh, coach, not really sure about that. Maybe it's because it feels like it's the ultimate having got your shit together. I don't know. That's kind of how I think of it.
Do you know what? It's so funny you say that because I saw this meme the other day that was like, I don't know if you've seen it. It's like the maddest person I know. I'm becoming a life coach. And I was like, I just laughed so much because I was like, there's so much truth in that. And I think I had so many preconceived ideas about coaching before I went into it. So many sort of negative connotations about it because I'd never really experienced it before. I didn't really get it. But like seeing that meme, I'm like, oh, I understand now that often people who come to coaching, they haven't always had the smoothest path. They've had a few setbacks. They've had a few detours along the way. And I think when certain doors close on you, it forces you to dig a little bit deeper, you know, and like start to question things a bit more. So it's sort of like the experience and the truth that you end up getting as a result is sort of hard earned.
Right.
And I think this hard earned wisdom is actually maybe what makes people good at coaching. And I think I had a lot of imposter syndrome at the start, like, who am I to coach people who are more you know, successful than me. Like, who am I to kind of tell anyone what to do? But that is a misconception in itself, because it's really not telling anyone what to do. You know, I'm not there to be an expert of anyone's life. Mm-hmm. You're the expert of your life. I'm there to be the expert on coaching and help master and facilitate a process that will unlock whatever's keeping you stuck and help you sort of align to your highest potential, I suppose.
Yeah. I think it's even like the language of coach, isn't it? Because when you hear about life coach, it's got that like people poking fun at it a little bit. And I know you don't call yourself a life coach, but when I've mentioned to people, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm working with a coach. They're like, what, like a life coach? And I think it gives these ideas of like, why do you need a life coach? Are you just like a shit at life? Can you not do life? And then totally. I explain to people like, no, it's literally, to me, I see it as like this tool to help me be better at all the things. It's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like this kind of secret magic of like getting above life. Do you know what I mean?
It is like a bit of a secret like source thing, because I think you're right. I think, you know, when you first hear about it, sometimes it can have a negative connotation, like, oh, is it a bit tragic? Like, yeah, you need help with life. But I remember one of my amazing coaches, one of the first ones that I had, saying to me when I first started working with her, she was like, everyone has a coach. Everyone who is successful and has the success that you want has a coach. It's like the worst, best kept secret. And I was like, interesting. And then when you're sort of exposed to that world, you're like, oh yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, when you hear that, it's like, if you're an amazing athlete, you obviously have a coach. If you're a CEO or something, you have a coach. And actually, when you have worked in startups like I have, and the CEOs haven't worked with coaches, like it really shows that someone's not having that external voice to like guide them. But anyway, I mean, that's what you're doing now.
Yeah.
But as you said, some doors closed, some things changed that led you. I want to be like, where were you 10 years ago? Or how did you get to being a coach?
Oh God, where was I 10 years ago? Well, I've had a squiggly little journey. I started my career as an actor, an aspiring actor, I think is more appropriate. I did the whole sort of auditioning, spending a lot of time not working, very occasionally working as an actor. So alongside that, I had a lot of different, what I would have called day jobs. You know, I worked in interior design, I worked in architecture, doing lots of different assistant roles. And I did that all the way up to until I was 27. And then I got a new job working at an amazing visual effects studio called The Mill. And that was a real sort of pivotal moment for me in my career, because that was the first sort of job that I had that I really fell in love with. And so that became the kind of beginning of the end of acting. I was like, right, I think I've done my time. It's time
did
to
you
put that
ever
to
get
bed.
On Hollyoaks?
No.
Because to me, that's like the epitome. That's the epitome of, I'm like, okay, but were you on Hollyoaks?
I would have loved to have been on Hollyoaks, moved to Manchester. Is that where they film it, Manchester?
No idea. Midlands, somewhere.
Somewhere, yeah.
Is there anything that people like would know that you did?
No. I was in a Travelodge advert once, and they made a puppet to look like me. And sometimes there's still vans that drive around the country with me in bed with my puppet.
No,
yeah.
Do you know,
might see those vans on the motorway?
Now you say this, I do kind of feel like I might have seen that
little
puppet.
Pink blazer.
Okay, we're gonna have to find that and like share listeners. That on the Instagram channel, because that is so funny.
Oh dear.
Okay, so you end up, you do your bits and bobs, you decide to leave acting, then you get your day job in production.
Yeah, visual effects. So yeah, and I just loved it. It was an amazing creative studio, and that was sort of the turning point that I thought, okay, I'm gonna go all in on this. I'm gonna do the corporate career. I'm a corporate girlie now. Mm. The creative career is over, and this is me. And I sort of saw these people around me, you know, doing amazing things, like really climbing the corporate ladder, and I was like, yeah, this is it now. I'm doing this.
Well, that sounds like quite a massive shift. Like, was that a death of creative Lauren in the way you saw it? Or
do you know what? I didn't see it like that at the time, but in hindsight, I realized that there was a little part of my creative side that sort of, I don't want to say died. But
sorry, very dramatic.
I mean, it comes with the territory, right? Sort of went to sleep. And I did love my job, but I always felt like I was always kind of wanting to do more things than my role really allowed me to do. I was always like launching all these extra projects, like trying to find these different outlets for my creativity, because I was in a very operational role, which is what I then thought I should be doing. But actually, in hindsight, I realized that is not me at my fullest expression. Like, I am inherently creative. So I was always trying to like carve out a little niche for myself and like give myself extra work to do, basically.
Yeah. But then you put on your corporate girly uniform and that's the role.
I mean, it was like creative corporate. So it wasn't like, it was like a really cool, like creative company. But yeah, it was the whole time was probably like a 6-year identity crisis, really.
Okay, tell me more.
Well, it's like the death of my purpose, in a sense. I thought acting was like my lifelong passion and dream and I was going to do that forever. So I was always very driven and I always had this very clear sense of like what I'm pursuing. And so when that wasn't a thing anymore, I thought it was this corporate career, but like what in the corporate career, I didn't really know. I just thought, oh, there's got to be something in here. And, you know, my path will just kind of reveal itself to me.
Okay.
But it didn't. And when I decided I wanted to sort of move on from that role, I was like, right, okay, what's next for me? What's the next chapter? And the only thing I can compare it to is, have you seen Dark Matter, that show on Apple TV?
Which one is that? Because there's two I always get confused.
It's the quantum, like, realities one.
Yes, okay, I have seen that. It's with amazing.
Is it Joel Edgerton?
God, no idea. But yeah, I've seen it.
So, yeah, you know how he basically gets thrust into this alternative universe and then he goes into this quantum corridor of infinite realities and he's trying to find his reality, like the one he wants to get to.
Yes.
And he's opening all these doors and he's like, he opens that one and he's like, oh, no, that's not the right one. And then he opens another one. It's like, oh, no, not that one. That's how I felt trying to find my way.
That's literally how
world.
I feel all the time. I'm like, surely anyone listening to this, I'm like, yeah, that's the weird years. It's so weird. And it's almost like it's the sadness as well of wanting to peek behind the door, but nothing comes easily, right? So it's like anything you think about doing, you'd have to really focus on it for a while to even know if it's the right thing.
Totally. And like, I am a very like gut-driven person. Like, I really move intuitively. And I was like peeking. I was like, oh, is it HR? No. I was like, is it operations? No. Is it production? And just nothing felt quite right. So then that's a really unsettling place to be in when you've always had a very clear direction. I've always been very ambitious, very driven. And it's like, how do I now channel all of this sort of creative energy that I have and I don't know what to do with?
So you're looking behind the doors and then what? Is there something you fix on or what happens next?
Well, at one point or another, I sort of become fixated that I was going to become a chief of staff. I was like, right, I feel like I found my door. This is it. And you may know about me by now that when I sort of get an idea for something, I very quickly will go all in on that idea. I'm a generator in human design. Mm. So it's a blessing and a curse. Like when I get an idea, I can make things happen very quickly, usually. So I thought I was going to be a chief of staff. I kept talking to Dee, my husband, about it. I was like, this is it. I found my thing. I'm going to be this amazing chief of staff. And then he got so sick of me banging on about this. And I remember one day we were having dinner and he was like, why do you want to do that, by the way? And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, what is it about that role that excites you? And I was like, you know, it's the next logical step in my career. And he was like, yeah, but why? And I was like, stop being so annoying. And I just really couldn't, I really didn't know. And that was like I really had to sit with that. And I was like, yeah, why do I want to do that? And I couldn't articulate an answer. And that was so annoying because I finally felt like I'd found my door, finally felt like I found my reality. And then Dee just blows it all up with what was actually a really good coaching question and ultimately led me on a path of finding my truth, I guess.
Yeah, I can really relate to that because I feel like I did a very similar thing. I always had the idea of like, I want to be a tech CEO. Like that was my thing. And I worked at a tech startup. I worked at a few over the years and worked at one for 4 years. I was there from like the founding team, you know, built the whole thing and in the end kind of fell out of love with the company and I moved on. But when I left there, I literally had like the full mental breakdown of like, well, if it's not this, like if I'm not going to be a tech CEO, like what the fuck am I going to do? And I didn't even like really until years had passed think about like, why do you even want that? And when I have sat down and analyzed it, I was like, oh, it's literally just like, for me, it was just ego.
Yeah.
It was like, I want people to see me as that. Because when I looked at my founders, I was never like, oh, I want to be doing what they're doing. Mm. Like, I hate managing people. Mm. I'm actually a terrible manager. So
I'm sure that is
hopefully
not
no one who's hired me as a manager is listening to this. Because in that case, I'm great. But I don't enjoy it. I'm not naturally like, I'm not good at educating people, I don't think. And I don't particularly like...
I wholeheartedly disagree with that, by the way.
No, yeah. Honestly, if I ever...
like manage me.
If I ever have to prove anything to you with that, it's quite easy to do. And yeah, I didn't really want to do long hours. And I don't actually want my work to be my whole life.
Yeah.
But it was like the expectation of... yeah, it's the ego. And it's also that idea of... Because I was working in tech, I was consuming all this stuff of like, there's no female tech founders. Mm. And I was like... well, someone's got to do it. It's going to have to be me, because why not? And it's easy to kind of just drink the Kool-Aid of society sometimes.
It really is. And I think the ego thing is so important, because that was exactly what it was for me. It was like my ego wanted to be a chief of staff. I wanted the job title. I wanted the salary. You know, I wanted the sort of, the, I guess, the status in to an extent that I thought that would give me. But is that aligned to what my passions are and me in my best self? Would I have enjoyed that role?
Mm.
Probably not, like, or at least not as much as I enjoy what I'm doing now. And I think it's just a trap that I think so many of us fall into, because we don't often stop to question why. And something we talk about in coaching is getting to the why behind the why behind the why, because very often, you know, life's just moving at a million miles an hour. We're bouncing from one thing to another, and often everything just kind of unfolds organically. You don't really have always the time to sort of catch your breath, zoom out and think, okay, where am I going? What's important to me and why is it important? And this is where coaching, I guess, is such a useful tool, because it forces that space.
Yeah. I love like what we've done in coaching of the wheel of life. Maybe can you just give a couple of lines on what the wheel of life is?
Yeah. So you essentially have different segments of like the core areas of your life, and it's like shaped like a wheel. So you'll have, you know, career, finances, relationships, health and wellness, et cetera, et cetera. And you kind of rate all of those areas of your life from a scale of 1 to 10 on how sort of fulfilled and happy you are. And it's a really interesting exercise, because I think very often we're sort of so focused on like one thing, like maybe we're really focused on our career, or maybe we're really focused on like finding a partner or getting the finances that we want. And often you don't realize that it can sometimes come as a detriment to all the other things in your life. So it's really about, you know, getting all segments of the wheel up as high as we possibly can, not one detriment to the other, bringing them all in line. So we have a more well-rounded sense of self and existence, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's also important what you said of not at the detriment of each other, because I think inevitably what I was seeing in my own life was like, I was killing it in financially and like my relationship was really good, but I was like constantly burnt out. And also I had no time. Mm-hmm. And actually it was almost like I had to go back and look at the wheel and be like, what things, there's obviously unicorn jobs and there's unicorn roles that you can carve out for yourself. But if I only want to work 3 days a week, yeah, I'm probably not going to have the status of a CEO or the finances of a CEO. Like that is the payoff.
Yeah.
And it feels like so many of us, it's almost like, why don't we ask ourselves these questions? Like, why is university or school not having us ask these questions earlier?
Because we're trapped in the capitalist system that just wants us to like get our head down, work 5 days a week and kind of burn ourselves out to an extent. And I think this is why so many people are in their 30s and having these moments of being in the weird years and questioning, you know, we've built these lives that we thought we wanted, but is it actually what we want?
Yeah. And also the payoff now, I think, is different to the generations earlier than us. Like it also can feel like you do all the steps, like you have the first class degree and you go to London and you build the corporate life and then you get all these things and you're like, well, I still don't have, like, I can't afford a five-bedroom house.
Promised we were going to have. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, 100%. It's like the rules of the game have sort of changed a bit and now we're kind of, everyone's sort of floundering and trying to make sense of it, which is a scary time, but I think it can also be an exciting time.
So you get this question from your husband and he says, why do you want to do this? And you're like, I have no idea.
Yeah.
What happens next?
what happens next? Next was the void. So I called this period of my life the void, where I was just like, who am I? What am I doing? I felt so confused because I felt like I'd failed on so many levels. I was like, I thought I was supposed to have this amazing corporate career. I could see all my friends, all my colleagues, you know, just soaring in their roles and their careers. And I just couldn't find my path. I couldn't find my door. And I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, I kept really internalizing everything that was going on and thinking, God, I'm in my early 30s and I've just completely like fucked up my career. Yeah, I thought that I'd sort of fucked it all up basically. And yeah, then I was looking everywhere for answers, everywhere outside of myself. I wanted someone else to sort of tell me what to do, to give me an answer. But of course, then whenever someone would give me a suggestion, I'd be like, well, that's not it.
Not that one.
You're wrong. It's not that door. So I started meditating and eventually it sort of led me to coaching. And I think this is what a lot of people, this is why a lot of people end up being drawn to coaching, because you sort of get to the end of your rope and you're like, right, I need some sort of divine kind of intervention or guidance because I haven't been able to find the answers by myself.
I want to stop on the meditating thing because I think that's it's so interesting, because from my experience people are generally in two camps. They're either like, oh my God, love it, or it feels like a real barrier of like, well, how would I get answers from meditating?
I think there's so many preconceived ideas about what meditating is. A lot of what I hear is like, oh, I've just got to stop my thoughts and like empty my mind. And that's what we very often think of. But really, it's about focusing our attention on one thing. It's not about stopping thoughts. It's maybe about becoming aware of the thoughts. And there's so many different styles of meditations you can do. Like, I got really into the Joe Dispenza meditations at this time, which are literally about kind of creating a new identity for yourself. So it's thinking about your old self, your limited self. So it's like the version of you that's sort of held back by fear, by limiting beliefs, by self-doubt. And this was the version of me at that time. I'd sort of really, my confidence was at an all-time low. And you sort of get really clear on who you don't want to be anymore, all of these thoughts you want to let go of. And then you start to build an identity of, okay, so who do I want to be? Who is the most empowered version of me? Who's the more expanded version of me? How do they think? How do they feel? What do they do? And you may notice some parallels in some of the work that we do in coaching. So that was really, really transformative to me. That just like sort of like blew my mind wide open. And I was listening to Joe Dispenza for like an hour a day. Dee thought I'd gone mad. He was like, what's she doing in the spare room again? Sat on the floor for an hour.
It's also, I mean, we know that kind of cliche, and it's a cliche, but it's very much true, of like, you cannot be what you don't see. Like, it's why representation is so important.
Yes.
It's that we need to have role models for people growing up and for adults to look at and be like, okay, well, that person has done it, so I feel like I can do it.
Yeah.
And to me, it almost feels like, I mean, my favorite type of meditation is that like future self visualization, where I can really like bring it to life in my head. And it's, for me, it's like, at first you feel very silly. My meditation for my future self is like, I can see exactly the room I'm in and it's an office and it's got these like accolades that I've done and it's got books that I'm interested in. And I've now practiced it so much that I can like go there in a second. And for me, it's exactly that. It's like, well, if I can't even allow my brain to dream a little bit of what that could be, how would I go out and do it, you know?
100%. And I think this is where a lot of people get stuck with goals. This is where I used to get stuck with goals, because I'd have these sort of ambitions, like I'd set New Year's resolutions, say I'm like, right, I'm going to quit drinking, I'm, you know, going to get really healthy, do all this stuff. And then I'd maybe do it for like 2 weeks and then I'd just sort of fall off, and I was like indulging in all these bad habits, like partying, all of this stuff that I didn't really want to be doing, but I felt like I couldn't break the cycle. It was only when I started thinking about, okay, who do I want to be? What does that person do? That I realized there was such a disconnect between the vision that I really had for my life and the person I wanted to be and the person I was behaving as in those moments. And when I had that shift, it really was a big transformative moment in my life. Like, I was able to suddenly change all my habits, like quit smoking. I hope my mom and dad aren't listening to this. yeah, and just get really healthy, like cut way down on drinking. And all of a sudden, everything that felt like such a struggle felt completely effortless because I'd sort of changed how I see myself.
Yeah, I love that. I've heard people talk about the habits thing of rather than being like, I'm going to run 3 times a week or whatever, it's often helpful to be like, I am a person who runs, or like, I am a runner. Yeah, and then you exactly. start building it into your view. And people might listen to this and be like, oh, but that's really hard to do. But your brain does it anyway, because you do it with negative thoughts. Like, yeah, I have so many negative thoughts that I'd built in to be like, I am that person. And it's like, well, now I just have to flip them and do it for positive things, because otherwise it's just like a downhill spiral.
Yeah. And I think it takes time. Like, the subconscious reprogramming takes time, because those negative thoughts and beliefs that we have are so deeply held. Mm. Like, often they were formed in childhood, and we've lived our entire lives through that lens of seeing ourselves and reality in that way. So it's not something that is just going to sort of flip overnight. Like, I know I said, for me, it did have a big transformative insight, but I'm still working through a lot of those negative thoughts and beliefs now. Mm. And I think this is why mantras sometimes on their own can be powerful, but it's not always enough, because actually our brain is looking for evidence. It's looking for evidence of that new identity. And so the way you create that is you can sort of train your subconscious mind with mantras, with repetition, with affirmations, but then you need to actually do something about it. You need to show up in new ways. You need to prove to yourself that you are the person that you say you are in your mind.
Yeah, that is actually one of the things I've loved so much in working together is... this whole thing's just going to be a big old ad for coaching.
Come and get coaching, come to Mood.
But was that thing of like proving yourself wrong? I thought that was so interesting that you were talking about the science behind that. Your brain wants to prove itself right.
Yes.
Can you go into that? You're going to explain it better than me.
Yeah. So our brains have a natural confirmation bias. So it's always looking for evidence that what you believe is reality is in fact true. And so even if it's not really the case, our brain will trick us into thinking it's the case. So for example, if you have a negative belief like that everyone hates me, no one likes me, then as soon as, you know, someone doesn't text you back for like 1 minute, your brain is automatically going to go, see, told you so, they hate you, nobody likes you. Do you know what I mean? So it's always looking for evidence to build a case that your perception of reality is the truth. But when we have awareness of this, then we can start to change. I always say, you're probably sick of hearing me saying this, Lydia, that it's all a game of awareness. And the more we can become aware of what these unconscious patterns and beliefs are, the more we can change them.
And also that, like, your brain is not you to a degree. And it's like, it's not the truth, because that's... Well, yeah, I found that so interesting of like, I almost gamified it. Like, I have to prove myself wrong. Of, I always had this deeply ingrained belief that like, I never stick to anything and I don't have any grit and I'm a loser because I quit on everything. And there's so much evidence of that in my life. But actually, since I've tried to like reframe it and look for the things that I don't quit on, like, for example, exercise, I've consistently exercised for like 15 years. I've never broken it. But that wouldn't even come into my brain's recognition of like grit and persistence. It was only focusing on like all the failures.
But isn't that so interesting? Because I immediately think of you as someone who does have grit and persistence. Like, you know, you're always showing up. You're constantly on it. Like, you get all the homework done. Like, you're so committed. So this is why the brain can be so sneaky. And I always, I think of the subconscious mind as almost like this separate entity. It's like you versus your subconscious, because the subconscious mind loves familiarity. It wants to feel safe. It doesn't want you to change. Even if you're stuck, even if you're limited, the subconscious mind would still rather you be in the same old situation that you've always been in. So in a sense, you have to fight against your subconscious mind, become aware of what it's saying, and then sort of rise above it.
Yeah.
Which is why I like that alter ego exercise that we did.
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah.
So funny. Yeah, the naming and like characterizing your inner critic, we called it,
right? Yeah. And then, so you have your inner critic who, you know, is the one saying all these negative thoughts and beliefs to you, and then you can create a character for them. So it's like, okay, who is this character? Is it a sort of critical parent? Is it an old teacher? You know, mm-hmm. whose voice is it really? Where's this voice come from? And then they start to kind of lose their power over you when you start to create this kind of character for them. And then you can create another character who is one of your allies. So who do you really want in the room with you in those moments of self-doubt, of fear? Do you want, you know, a supportive cheerleader? Maybe you want a sort of spiritual guide. Maybe you want a kind of successful, like founder style person to kind of guide you.
Yeah.
So then you can call them in, and it's almost like they can have a conversation with each other.
And it sounds fucking nuts. Like, let's be honest, it does sound fucking nuts, but it is really helpful. Like, I named my inner critic Tate because I was like, my inner critic to me is like a kind of Weasley man who's never done anything, who sits on the internet and criticizes women. Tate. Like, that's my inner critic.
Oh, my friend's just got a sausage dog called Tate.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a girl.
But what about the relation to Andrew Tate? I feel like Tate is gone.
Oh, God. Yeah, I didn't even make that connection. Oh, yeah.
She needs to change that dog's name.
She might need to change the name.
But that's the thing to me. And now, actually, I get to meet that inner critic multiple times on my TikTok every week. But
literally. <yeah. laughs>
And giving it that name, because I was like, oh, well, that's someone who I don't respect people like that. And I don't hold any value in their opinions, because I can just see like, oh, it's deeply ingrained misogyny and I'm not interested in it. And once I gave like that inner critic a voice, that now when I think of something, it almost has like an audible, it sounds nuts, it's almost like a, oh, well, you can't do anything. And I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, like, shut up, Tate. Get out. But it's true. And I think it can be a really powerful way to sort of, to bring that awareness in, because I really notice it now. I'm so aware when my subconscious mind is trying to sabotage me, because before it would happen and it would almost feel involuntary. And I feel like everyone can relate to that feeling of, or you get that anxious thought and then suddenly you're stuck in the spiral, and one anxious thought leads to the next, to the next, to the next. And then you're completely catastrophizing, you know, panicking, questioning all your life choices. Now, it's not that I don't feel anxious thoughts, and perhaps you can relate to this as well. The thoughts still come, but you can stop the spiral in its tracks.
Yeah.
And I will literally be like, not today, subconscious mind. Like, I am in control. I'm driving the bus. Yeah, shut the fuck up.
I love it. Shut the fuck up is just a good phrase to use in your life more. I advocate for that. I want to go into a few bits from listeners, because I put this out to our listeners and ask them for kind of their thoughts, problems, feelings around like feeling stuck, their ideas of coaching, all this different stuff. Mm. And we got four here we're going to go into. So someone had said, how do you kick your own ass into taking the first step to a goal? Because it's always the hardest.
Yeah, I agree. The first step is always the hardest. And I think once you've broken that initial fear barrier, it can get easier. But I would always say the first step with a goal is to get clear on the why.
Mm.
Like, why do you actually want that goal? And something that John Perkis talks about in his book, The Power of Letting Go, is we have what he calls authentic desires and we have borrowed desires. And very often we think the borrowed desires are our desires. You know, we see someone else driving like an amazing car, so we think, well, I want an amazing car. Or we see people, you know, buying a house and settling down, having kids. We think, well, that's what I should be doing. But is it what you really want? Or do you just think you want it because you're seeing everyone around you want it? And often people become disconnected from their authentic desires because there is so much societal pressure. We're always comparing ourselves to what everyone else is doing. So I would say get really clear on the why, because another aspect of that is, I would say you're not actually chasing the goal itself. You're chasing the feeling that you think having that goal will give you.
Right.
If you think that, you know, having this fancy car is going to, you know, you're going to feel confident, you're going to feel good about yourself, I would argue that, you know, maybe what you're actually seeking is a deeper validation, and you're not going to find that in the car. You're going to maybe have to go a little bit deeper and figure out what's really holding you back from feeling that confidence and that self-assurance that you're craving.
Yeah, it reminds me of that thing I wrote down on Monday, actually, I think in our meditation. It was something about like putting weight behind the desire.
Mm.
Do you remember what it was? It was like the weight behind the desire has to outweigh.
Oh, yeah. You have to attach more desire to the vision than the pain it takes to work towards it.
You have to attach more desire to the vision than the pain it takes to work towards it.
Yeah, so you have to really want something. And again, this comes back to the why. Like, unless you really want it, are you going to be able to put yourself out there in the way that is required to bring it to life? And this is often thinking about, you know, big life-changing goals like launching projects, launching businesses, stuff that is hard to do. Like, when it's difficult, you need to have so much desire and be so clear on your vision and use that as the fuel that's going to drive you forwards. Weak desire brings weak results.
And also, like, yeah, it is that fuel for maybe then you end up doing less, but you focus on the things that you really want. Like, I've thought about so many businesses that I've been like, oh, maybe I should do this, maybe I should do this. And I could never really find the why. Whereas I feel like with this project of the podcast, I'm like, I have no idea if this will ever become anything. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. But what I really want is to have these conversations like for people in the same place. And that desire is strong enough that it's like, okay, I can, it gives me the motivation to keep coming back to it. Yeah. And I think with the podcast, like attaching that desire of like, I do really want to have these conversations with people that hopefully help people, which every time I'm like, have chronic neck pain editing and my software's crashed 400 times and I'm like, literally, fuck this. It helps you keep going. So like, hopefully that's useful for that listener, that go back to the why and really refine it and use it as your fuel.
Yeah. And I think like in what you're doing, you're making it about something that's more than just yourself. Like, it can be so motivating when you're actually doing something that you know is going to help or support or kind of serve others in some way. It makes it less about you, more about them.
Right. Okay, so what else did we have? We had any advice for if you're not sure what your passion is, but you know there's something more.
Wow. This is just summarizes the weird years, I think. I mean, Ikigai is a really amazing tool, I think. Are you familiar with this one?
I have done it a while ago, yeah.
Yeah, some listeners might be familiar with it, but in case they're not, it's you essentially identify what it is you love, what you're good at, what the world needs, and what you can get paid for. And it's this Japanese philosophy that is a tool to help you identify your purpose. So the intersection of those four things is essentially where your purpose is said to be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, and there's a book about it, right?
Yeah, there is a book.
Okay, hopefully.
But I was doing that at my early days as well. I was like, what am I good at? What can I get paid for? What does the world need? Da, da, da. And it was all about, stuff was coming up. It's all about people. Like, it's got to be something with people. And so I think, again, keep refining it, keep going back to it, explore it. And just don't give up. Like, if you feel that call, like, listen to that gut feeling, because it doesn't go away, you know, it will keep coming back. And, you know, chances are maybe all the doors that are closing are actually leading them to somewhere greater.
And also maybe to be less scared of doors closing. So I remember I had a therapist, love therapy. I actually didn't love this therapist that much. But I had a lot of opinions. And
oh,
I'd
really?
Sometimes be like, Hillary,
yeah.
a bit less opinions on that, thank you. I remember her saying something about like doors closing is inevitable of life. Yeah. It's like that is something you have to get comfortable with because that is how you move through the world. And I was like, yeah, that's really true. And actually don't beat yourself up so much about those things happening. The other thing I was just thinking about what you're saying with the Ikigai, anyone who uses ChatGPT as well, like throw it in there and 100%. ask it what jobs you can do. There's so many more jobs or projects or things you can go after that literally you would never cross your mind because they're not things you see every day.
It's so true. And also even that exercise we did on coaching the other day where you just sort of set a timer for 5 minutes and try and challenge yourself to think of as many out-of-the-box ideas as you possibly can. Because very often we get fixated on like one thing. But actually, when we kind of try and tap into different parts of our brain, just like write freely, don't overthink it, you'll be surprised like some good stuff can come out of that.
Yeah, for sure. I've done that exercise. I actually love it. So here we have someone who I'm presuming is a founder or a business owner of some form. They said, I'm not sure how to step into the next evolution of my business. It feels stagnant at the moment. I get stuck in thinking and I don't know what to do. No one is listening.
Ooh, no one is listening. I think the not knowing what to do and feeling confused is such a natural part, firstly, of being a business owner. Like the pressure of wearing all the hats and having sometimes it feels like no one to talk to is really overwhelming. So I think this listener should firstly give themselves a bit of grace and compassion for everything that they've already done and achieved so far. I think for me, this is about identifying like what is the biggest blocker. It sounds like there's some sort of bottleneck. Normally there's an area that might be stopping things from flowing. You know, is it their own mindset? It sounds like maybe there's a bit of fear there. Is that causing the blocker? Is it a physical blocker? You know, a lack of sales? Is it that the leads aren't getting nurtured? You know, I would say start by trying to figure out, okay, where is the blocker really coming from? Because again, once you have the awareness, then you can find a solution, find a way to work through that.
Everything comes back to awareness.
Everything always comes back to awareness. Shall I share my acronym for awareness? Do you think your listeners would like this? Do you remember this one? ACT.
Yeah, go for it.
So I think this is a really good tool when you're feeling triggered by fear, by doubt, you don't know what to do, is remember this acronym, ACT, A-C-T, Awareness, Choice, Trust. And I learned this from a coach that I worked with called Joel, who's amazing. And first, it's about awareness. It's becoming aware that you've been triggered. Okay, how is this feeling showing up in my body? You know, maybe my heart is racing, my palms are sweating. And trying to become aware of what is it that's triggered me to feel this way. And then remembering that in those moments, you have a choice. Am I going to allow myself to go into that negative thought spiral and catastrophize everything and start questioning my life choices? Or can I choose something else? Can I choose to call in my allies, call in my empowering alter egos, journal, move my body, do something to shift that energy? And then the T is trust. It's all about trusting in yourself, trusting in your vision, and just trusting that it's all going to work out. And you know, nothing is fixed, nothing is permanent, and you'll find a way through.
Awareness, choice, trust. Get it tattooed.
Maybe I will. I'll come back from Bali with ACT on me.
I'd love that.
It's too close to the acting though. I don't think I could have it.
That's true. So, I mean, you've been on such a wild journey. When you look back, what's something you'd tell yourself if you could speak to yourself 10 years ago?
I say, just don't worry about what anyone else is doing. Like, stop comparing yourself to other people. Find your own way. And the obstacle is the way.
This is a
book by Ryan Holiday. It's a very stoic sort of mentality, but it's all about the challenges that we face. Rather than seeing them as a challenge, can you turn that challenge into an opportunity? And when I look back on my life, every setback, every closed door was actually what led me to where I am today. So just approach everything with that mindset, and I'm sure amazing things will happen.
Maybe even journaling on that is useful, of like, from that last, you know, closed door or whatever it was, obstacle, how did it turn into an opportunity? To see that proof is kind of helpful.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, there is some sort of divine intervention. Maybe you are being guided to something else. So I guess I would really want to say, for anyone who's feeling like where I was, you know, in the weird years, really lost, feeling like they failed, you know, don't give up on yourself. Like, keep going. Just keep exploring, dig deeper into yourself and figure out what you really care about and who you can help. And I'm sure you'll find a way through.
And life is so long. Like, I remember
so long.
I love it when, I mean, fingers crossed it is, but I remember seeing those Instagram stories where it's like, they show what age successful people got successful. And yeah. I think it was like, maybe it was Oprah or something, didn't have her show, I think, until she was 40. I might be misquoting that. I know that there was one around J.K. Rowling. Oh, yeah. She didn't have her first book until like her late 30s. She got turned down, like Harry Potter got turned back down like 10 different publishers. And my favourite one was that Vlad the Impaler didn't start impaling anyone until his mid-30s.
Is that right?
So there's still time.
There's still hope.
There's Vlad still time to impale. Should that be your dream?
Should that be your purpose?
That'll probably get me flagged on 100 platforms. So don't take that. That's not advice. Okay, so we're going to close off the podcast with our little section, Yes or Mess. So we've got 5 rapid-fire questions. And you have to answer with yes if you're into it, you're supporting it. Or mess if you're like, no, that needs to go in the bin.
Okay.
Self-help books.
Yes.
Do you have a favourite? at the moment? You've literally read everything in the world, so.
I love, okay, the one I come back to again and again is Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. He was a plastic surgeon and he noticed the personality shift that would happen when people had surgery. So it's all about, again, creating a new identity for yourself. So I really highly recommend that one.
Psycho-Cybernetics.
Psycho-Cybernetics, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to have to order that next. Comparison.
Mess.
Fair. The statement, you can always be better.
That's a tricky one for me because I think there's some truth in that statement, but depending on the intent behind the statement, I could see that that could also be damaging.
Mm.
Do I have to choose?
Yeah.
You can always be better. I think, yes, I think there's always room for us to keep exploring, keep growing.
Nice. Maybe do it with softness. Don't shout at yourself in the morning.
Exactly, with kindness, always.
Self-care morning routines.
Yes.
What's your self-care morning routine?
Meditation in the morning. When I'm, it's hard to do it when I'm leading so many meditations these days, but that's my favourite. Yoga, skincare, coffee is probably not that healthy, but it's just...
It's real.
And I love to write. I love using my mornings for writing time. That's when I feel like my brain is expanded after my meditation.
Mm.
It's very quite simple, really.
And the last one, listening to your intuition.
Yes, 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 always.
That's such a journey. I'm really like learning this intuition thing because honestly, like my gut cannot
trust it. This intuition thing.
Yeah, I cannot trust my gut for shit. My gut can't handle caffeine, can't handle dairy. Like my gut literally can do nothing. So I find it very hard when people are like, what does your gut say? I'm like, it says I have IBS. That's literally, that's what it says.
It's not the answer I'm looking for.
No.
Well, I think you're doing an amazing job and I think maybe you're more intuitive than you give yourself credit for.
I love that. Well, what a nice way to, after I really lowered the tone, you brought it back up there. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Oh,
thank you for having me. Such a pleasure.
It's been a dream.
Oh, you're a dream.
And where can people find you?
People can find me on my website, www.moodldn.co. I'm also on Instagram at moodldn.co and LinkedIn and TikTok, lauren.palmer.
And also for anyone who's like, oh, I want to get into this stuff, but I have no idea where to start, your community meditations are amazing. So
thank you.
People should join that.
Yeah, it's free. Every Friday morning, we meet on Zoom for 30 minutes. So yeah, follow me on Instagram and I always send out the link every week. Oh, I'm also on Substack. I've got to mention Substack.
Oh, yeah.
Lauren.palmer on Substack. So I write a free weekly newsletter called Redesign Your Life. Well, that's been my current series anyway, where I'm sharing all the tools and practices that I've used to navigate my weird years and start redesigning my life again.
Amazing. Thank you so much for all the knowledge drops.
Oh, my pleasure. I hope there was some knowledge in there.
There was lots of knowledge. Well, thanks.
Thank you.